Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Karina Lukin and see the improvisational dance that inspired her work. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner, and I can't wait to meet a lot of you this weekend at the New Jersey SCBWI Conference. I hope you'll come up and say hi. This is episode number 359 of the podcast with Karina Lukin, and I have been waiting to share this episode with you. Karina's debut picture book is called The Book of Mistakes, and it's unlike anything I've read before. The artist narrating the story talks through creating art, making mistakes, overcompensating for said mistakes, and even finding beauty in the things unintentioned. The story feels raw and vulnerable, and I think that it's these qualities wherein the reader finds trust and safety within the pages. Have you read The Book of Mistakes yet? You'll want your own copy so that you can pore and bore over all of its tiny details and tiny mistakes. Please enjoy my conversation with Karina. Here's episode number 359 of the podcast with Karina Lukin. Welcome to the podcast, Karina Lukin. I'm glad that you're here, buddy. It's been exciting to watch your career.
Thank you, Matthew.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're published, Karina. That's a thing.
It's crazy.
Is it totally crazy to hear people talk about your book?
It is.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to talk about your book. It's going to be all crazy. I'm excited, though.
I'm excited, too. Well, I'm excited, and I'm so honored to be here, Matthew. It's
my pleasure. I'm glad that forever ago, I bring this up all the time, and I mean it as recognizing what a sacred place it is for me. But I met you on Kidlit Art on Twitter, mm-hmm. and that place is such a special place to me, partly because I say it this way, and I know that it's not true, but because I'm an outsider when I come to Kidlit Art on Thursday nights, because I'm one of the people that comes on that doesn't illustrate, but I come because I like art. I like seeing art that way. And actually I feel like going on to Kidlit Art feels even closer to me, like being in a museum and seeing, you know, art from children's illustrators on display. So I like that. And I like that that's how I found you. And you found me. And now, The Book of Mistakes. Yay! I like that I knew you and didn't know what this thing was that you were creating all this time that I had come to know you. And I'm so grateful that we ever first met, because that means that this book is in my life. And Karina, I know I've expressed to you already that The Book of Mistakes is a really beautiful book that is immediately special to me. And that's not just because I know you, but because you created something so beautiful here. So thank you for sharing it with us.
Oh, thank you, Matthew. Thank you very much. Yeah, I am. Gosh, well, I'm just so thrilled to be here. I'm such a huge fan of the podcast, and it's one of the only things that I will listen to other than like jazz music when I draw. So,
oh, that's so cool to know that. Thank you for that honor of being in your ears while you're making art. That's great.
Yeah, there's not much I can listen to. I'm not the kind of artist that can watch a show or listen to a book while I'm drawing. I just need to be more tuned in with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So, but people talking about books kind of works, and
love it.
Yeah, especially people talking in inspiring ways about books. So it's great.
Well, do you mind giving us a little bit more about yourself, a little introduction to who you are and what brought you to making books for children? I mentioned to you off recording that, and I'll link to it in the show notes, that you wrote this beautiful guest post on my friend Carter's blog on design of the picture book. And I value getting to know you that way. But for people listening that haven't encountered that yet, I'd love for you to make introductions.
Okay. So I guess, I'm someone who's loved drawing my whole life for sure. And loved reading my whole life.
Yeah.
But it's been a long journey for me. This is not something that came quickly, and I did not go to art school. I just went to a liberal arts college and took a few art classes. I took enough art classes so that I could take printmaking, which I really loved. I loved being in the printmaking studio, but I really took writing classes and poetry classes and then dance classes, actually, which I never thought of myself as a dancer in any way, shape, or form, but discovered this incredible dance program at the place I was going to school where they taught dance improvisation. And So I just did another blog post for Let's Talk Picture Books that's going to come out. I don't want to talk too much about the dance because I did just do that with her, but I'm feeling, oh gosh, I don't want to repeat myself, but that improvisation is, gosh, I think it had a more profound effect on the art I make than any art class I took. So that was college. And then there were 17 years of like waitressing and teaching art to kids and working as a substitute paraeducator and in a lot of different kindergarten, first grade classrooms all throughout Grays Harbor County, which is on the coast of Washington. So I've been in actually a lot of different classrooms and done a lot of drawing with kids. And that all slowly has informed my art and how I think about making art. And then I became a mom. That was 7 years ago. And I would say, I'm not going chronologically, but I would say that when I graduated college, I figured out pretty quickly that what I wanted to do was making picture books, because in particular of this one book, which is The Very Persistent Gappers of Fripp by George Saunders and Lane Smith. And I had worked at a bookstore in high school, so I went back after college and my manager handed me that book and she said, "You're going to love this book." And she was so right. And it was one of those books that gave me chills up and down my spine. And I read it and I read it again and then again and thought, "I can't believe you can do this. I really want to do this." And then that was 17 years ago. So it's been a slow journey. And I would say it's taken me a long time to get all the pieces together that have added up to the book of mistakes, really, and maybe my ability to tell the kinds of stories that I want to tell. And one of those pieces is certainly being a mom. I think it opened my heart up in a certain way to some of the sweeter stories, because I used to really like all the weird and strange ones. Yeah. It's been a long road, but I think necessary. I think important for it to be long.
I could see that. I can see the influences from all of those different things in the Book of Mistakes. I feel like you poured all of that in there, especially I can see the teaching, the working with children, the dance, the just all of that. I can see the mistakes and the way that they can lift us to the next thing. Yeah, it's okay, wait, before we go too far Let me not put cart before the horse. There are, I think, people listening that haven't read your picture book yet. So do you mind sharing what this book is? How are you book talking it? How are you introducing it to others?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I can try too. We will try together, but I would love to hear you talk about it since it's out in the world and you're probably doing a fair amount of it now.
You know, it's funny because in some ways what I do is I hand people the book. And
good move. Well done. Classy.
I will tell people that, you know, this is a book that begins with a mistake and it's a drawing that evolves and the mistakes are transformed.
Yes.
And then there's more mistakes and more transformation and even more mistakes. And then you're halfway through the book and I can't tell you what happens after that.
No.
Because you have to read it.
The other component. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, no, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the other component of the book, the thing that, that makes it such an intimate work of art is that it's your voice or it's a voice speaking to the reader as you're sketching, or it appears as you're sketching. The book feels as though we are watching art be created and at the same time watching mistakes be created and watching an artist have to figure out what to do with those mistakes, which is something that is a dialogue that I think is not often seen or witnessed outside of your own head. I think that in creating the story the way you did, in using the format of the picture book the way you did, you're inviting a different dialogue into the heads of your readers and of the artists that are looking at this book, of any age of the reader, of any age of the artist. You're allowing us to witness a creative process and a way of storytelling that takes mistakes and sometimes doesn't know what to do with them except just to live with them.
Yeah, I think, you know, I have done a lot of drawing with kids. I did an after school program when I was right out of college, one day a week at a school where I was teaching. And I'm actually not a great, I would never be a great classroom teacher because I'm such a rotten lesson planner. I think I am more improvisational in my approach to art making. And so I would have these after school programs and I never knew how many kids I was going to get, that the parents were supposed to tell me beforehand and they never did. So I kind of see who was left and figure out what we need to do. And we did a lot of drawing and then drawing with my daughter. And so I definitely have had that experience of how fun it can be for, kids to watch a drawing happen, you know, and sort of how many kids don't get to have that experience very often, and actually what a fun experience it is. So when I was making the book, I definitely had that in the back of my mind. I had this idea of mistakes and transforming them and wanted to tell a certain kind of story, partly based off of having had my daughter crumple up her first drawing and throw it on the floor in frustration and burst into tears when she was about 4 years old. But I also had this sense of, you know, it's really fun to watch someone else draw and fix their mistakes. And that might actually be fun for kids, you know, instead of being a lesson thing or a preachy thing, just having it be kind of a fun thing too. Does that make sense?
Yes.
To
not create with such restraint that you're afraid to even let your pencil slip, the ink drop onto your paper, when we're so careful that we're holding back ourselves so much from the way we're trying to express ourselves.
Mm-hmm. We can get really stuck that way.
But finding that balance of being thoughtful. I mean, I'm going to, do you mind if I read an excerpt of the text? Is that okay to start? I think that hearing the way the text goes, and I know that people will hear me turning the page as well, because the text is spread out and often appearing on one side of the spread with the drawing taking shape on the other. Anyway, let me just start and then I'll get into what I was going to say. It started with one mistake. Making the other eye even bigger was another mistake. But the glasses they were a good idea. The elbow and the extra long neck, mistakes. So I'm going to stop there.
Just you did that so well, Matthew.
You've given, I mean, like good poetry, that white space that you've left in the book is the space for us. This is space for the reader. And I like that you've left so much white space on this book.
Yeah. But you know what?
Well, I was going to say, I like also that we can watch what you're adding and the way you're transforming your drawing for better or for worse. And that I think that there are even some things I would go out and say might not even be things that one would notice right away. And I like that quality. I'm going to go just to skip ahead slightly to when we see the girl in the tree. And you're right. There's a girl climbing a tree. And you're right. And the girl with the very long leg looks like she always meant to be climbing that tree. And what I like about that is I think there's a quality there of us pointing out our flaws to others in a way that we're very aware of them, but others might not see it until you point it out. I guess maybe that's my insecurity talking, but that feeling of like, I wouldn't have ever known that your one earlobe was lower than the other earlobe if you didn't tell me. But it's something that you think about all the time. Like, and,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true. Wow. I don't even know if I had quite thought of it that way. And you're so right. I mean, when I drew that girl, I wanted to try to make it so you didn't notice right away, you know, that one leg was longer than the other. So you did kind of have to do that double take, but you're so right. It is so much like these things that we obsess about ourselves that other people either don't even see or see and then really don't mind, don't care, or sometimes even love. I actually have done a couple events here in my town with the book at a bookstore and a toy store, and the manager of the toy store we were talking about the book, and I asked him if he had a favorite image, and that's his favorite image from the book. He just loves that girl. So there is funny. There's one other thing I wanted to say just about that, not to sidetrack us, but you asked about how I described the book, and thinking about actually these two, bookstore and toy store, where I've been recently and had some events. And I was talking to the owner of my local independent bookstore about the book. And she has started doing this thing where she's been really supportive. She's a big fan of the book. And people will come in and she'll hand it to them and say, you have to read this, customers. And then she'll say, there's a chair in the back in the kids section. Go sit down and read it back there. And I was like, Andrea, you're brilliant. Like she said, yeah, if people just stand at the counter, they don't get the experience, and you don't want to tell someone how to read a book.
Got it.
So instead of telling them how to read it, it's like she gives them that space. She just says, just go sit down and read it.
Yeah, give them space.
Yeah, I give them space to have the whole experience.
Because this is a book to experience. Because one of the other things that I sort of wrestled with how to say this, but what makes the book so beautiful is that the girl that you're trying to draw, where you keep encountering, I fixed a mistake. Oh, I made another mistake. I made her neck too long, but I found a way to cover it up. But now this is weird and this is right. There's something really perverse about that, but also beautiful about that. And that's something that I think is not, I think it's safe to say, it's not something we see in picture books often. The idea that I want to intentionally show you something that will make you perhaps feel uncomfortable, right? It might make you feel you yourself, like I've made mistakes before, and how embarrassing is it to show other people? It feels vulnerable. It feels unusual. Like there's something not right about it. There's the girl is what, half of the book she's unfinished, because we, the reader, are along with the artist trying to figure out, what does she need? What is she missing? What's the part I need to add? And that I think is what holds the entire storyline in tension. And that's what, that tension itself is what continues to draw us into the illustration. And I think therein finding the beauty, the tension is where we find the beauty in the story and in the illustration. And I'm just looking at her right now. She's so weird to look at and so wonderful, so beautiful, that I can picture sitting in the back of this bookstore and having that quiet space to inhabit the book and having that experience of how beautiful the story is, how accomplished the story is, especially by the end, the work you do in the end to let us step out of the experience of seeing you draw this character, to give us the chance to step back and see ourselves in the book, I think is, I know how you struggled with that ending. And then how from what I've read, it sounds like the ending sort of just after the struggle, it was there. There was the ending. After you cleared everything away, there was the ending. And it feels that way. It feels like, there it is. This is the ending it needs.
Yeah,
how careful we are, right? How careful we are not to say it. Do you love that?
Yeah.
How careful we are not to say it.
It is amazing how the ending can, in a way, be there all along. And are you finding your way towards it? Are you kind of unearthing it? Are you just trying to get rid of all of your ideas that are covering it up? And
you say one of the most beautiful things, Karina. I'm sorry, I'm jumping on your words. I apologize. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's a process.
Your line, this is one of the most beautiful lines I've ever read in a picture book. And maybe that I've ever read because of how now I hold on to this line in the context of the story. But you write, this won't give away the story, but it is text from near the end of the story. You write, do you see how with each mistake she is becoming? And that's it. End punctuation mark. And the way that hangs in the air to me, mirrored the way that really everything is hanging in the air in your story. There's balloons everywhere, and it reminds me of thoughts just hanging there waiting to be resolved, waiting to see where it goes. There's so much imagery you're playing with here that gives so much space for us to live in. Again, I'm so impressed. I'm in awe of the amount of space you give us, the reader, to inhabit the story with you, an experience that often the reader is left out of, and yet you have provided enough space for us to be there with you while the book is being created. It's something I haven't gone through before. It sets it apart.
Thank you, Matthew. Yeah, I think maybe I did all along have this idea almost of being in a room with a bunch of kids or with my daughter or somebody. Maybe you always have that when you're writing or drawing. I don't know. Sometimes maybe you're drawing for yourself. Sometimes you have this sense of, wanting to leave room for other people there in the journey. It's definitely, you know, the mistakes and all that. I mean, it is a personal story and that they're real. Those are my real mistakes. And I did get that rush of feeling when I had the idea of like my secrets, like sharing my secrets, if that makes sense. Like, oh my gosh, that would be scary. It was a scary thought. I guess that's what it was. It was scary and it kind of thrilling. And then I knew that I needed to follow that thought and see where it went. Exactly because it sort of scared me.
Can I ask, how did it feel to draw the characters wrong so many times, conventionally wrong so many times? I'm not saying it the right way. Misproportioned? I don't know what I'm trying to say. How did it feel, quote unquote, I'll do air quotes. How did it feel to draw her wrong so many times that ultimately you fell in love with her?
Yeah.
Because you said that earlier about loving this character, but was that gradual? What was it like finding her and then loving her?
You know, it's interesting that you use those words because I do think I love to draw people. I love to draw a lot of things, but I really love drawing people. And I do think every time I draw a character or a person, I do think it is about falling in love with that person you are drawing. And like that. Sometimes I think, you know, real love has a huge component of curiosity to it, where you don't just think, I know who this person is, but you kind of wonder, who is this person? And there's mystery there, and there's, you're paying attention and you're curious, you want to know more. And I think when a drawing is going well, I'm definitely approaching it from that place where I'm drawing this person and who is she? And I've always loved to draw people that are a little strange looking or a little odd, big noses, funny chins. I like that. I don't particularly enjoy drawing things that are just too cute or, I mean, that's fun too sometimes. Actually, everything is fun to draw sometimes, but I do find a lot of joy in drawing people that are odd characters. And I think it is just because they feel unique to me, and it makes me curious and it makes me wonder what they're up to, or I don't know. It's almost like it's not about me, it's about them. And that's more fun.
I like that. It makes me think of Shel Silverstein with some of these drawings with people with long legs or weird faces or big noses or whatever. And just being again, that word, I go with the word perverse, just something a little bit off, but you can't stop looking at it. It's wonderful. It's such a great thing to look at. And it just doesn't, I don't think in picture books, I think that there is other art that you can encounter that, certainly, but in the art put in front of the eyes of readers most often, it's not something you see often.
Yeah. And as a kid, I loved, you know, Where the Sidewalk Ends. And I loved his poems, but I loved his ink drawing so much.
So
and,
much. Yeah.
Yeah. Really loved him. Quentin Blake and.
Oh, yeah.
Edward Gorey. I had some of those strange, strange ink lines. I really loved. So I definitely have that memory as an adult. I can remember being a pretty young child and just loving the strangeness and the strangeness of language too, limericks. And, you know, my mom read to me a lot. And so I really developed a love of the sound of words, and we would read things that made us laugh. And they often were, and my mom would make up limericks too. She's a really kind of a limerick queen. She's really good at And she had one when I was a kid. She would do total mispronunciation of my name. We were talking about that earlier, but there once was a girl named Kariner. I'm sure that you've probably seen her. When you tear candy wrappings, she wakes up from napping. Her hearing just couldn't be keener. So my mom would do stuff like that. That was the total.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. So
what a great sign of affection to give your child a limerick.
She did a lot. That was, yeah, she made many, many, many limericks. So that silliness of and play with language, I think I love that in art as well, when the drawings are a little bit funny.
So let me ask you, knowing the time it took you to get to here, to being published, and knowing that you were writing along then and illustrating, but there was a period in time where you made the decision to put writing first, to focus more seriously on developing your craft. But the stories along the way that led you to here, what was that process like finding your voice? Because this particular book is so much about, again, embracing those mistakes and embracing the beauty in that and the vulnerability in that, which is a really wonderful but different place to be in. To debut as your first voice.
You know, I think it's interesting. It does bring my mind back to dance and my time at Middlebury College in their dance department, which I fell into that department because my freshman advisor, who you just randomly get, was a dance teacher. And she taught this class, Body and Earth. So it was about It's an environmental class about the human body, and it was through the dance department. It was a total mishmash, creative mishmash. It was a wonderful class. And she kind of talked me into signing up for an intro dance class just because she was my advisor and helping me sign up for all my first classes. And I ended up with this other dance teacher who did an improvisation class, intro dance class, that was not performance, ballet, jazz, like what you'd think of it, but it was all improvisation. And it was really, she was teaching the art of improvisation, and we would improvise with the musicians and we would improvise with other dancers. And we learned so much in that class about really about mindfulness and about paying attention. But also for me, I think I wasn't a dancer. I had trained in Aikido and I did gymnastics as a kid. And so I liked to move, but I was not a ballerina. I was not even close to, you know, the most graceful. I was probably the least graceful person in the class. And I kept taking classes because I loved it. And I loved what I was learning about the creative process. And every new semester, I would just sign up for another dance class because I couldn't really stop. And it was influencing my drawing for sure, because it was teaching me a lot about the human body and how it moves. But I think when I think about it, sometimes I think I was so far from being the best dancer in that class that in a way I had so much freedom to just have fun and, you know, make mistakes in a way. Like it just didn't, I didn't have to look graceful. I could do whatever movement I wanted. I just, yeah. And slowly over the course of 4 years, by the end, you know, I was a much more graceful dancer than I was when I started. And I remember having this epiphany, like, here's this thing I'm really honestly not that great at. And just by doing it continually and by having great teachers, I've developed a lot of skill in this thing, and I can do it well now. This, you know, this performance improvisation thing where you are a body on a stage with other bodies making choices that are creative and responding to the people around you to create something that is going to be, you know, witnessed, seen once, and then disappear. And something about that process, I loved it so much, I kept doing it, but I wasn't that good at it. So I was totally free. And I think it was so fun. And sometimes the thing you're better at, you know, if you're better at drawing or people at a young age tell you you're good at this thing, I think it's so easy to get tight because, you know, you are the kid that likes to draw, or people have told you you're good at it. And then you do seize up and you do become afraid to make a mistake because, especially if people are watching or you know, it just changes your relationship to the creative process. And I think for me, there was a revelation in this idea that it can be one really fun to do something creative that isn't what you're invested in and isn't what you're great at. But then two, wow, if I can get that much better at dance, which I don't have any natural talent for, you know, if I took that attention and approach to creativity and applied it to something that I have a little more talent for, you know, what could I do? And I think that really did help me. There was that turning point of, we had talked about this earlier, realizing I needed to stop doing some of the things that were distracting me, like knitting and crocheting, and focus for at least for a period of time on just making picture books, if that was really what I wanted to do. Anyway, that all fed into that sort of realization of, one, you can get pretty good at something you're not that good at if you stick with it, if you love it, if you're having fun. And then how do you then recapture that fun and apply it to something that you have some talent at, where you're much more likely to get precious and tight and fearful of making a mistake. Yeah. So yeah, that's all in there, I guess.
What a great life experience to be able to have too, and then just have that. I love the idea of, well, the pressure was off because I wasn't near the best, so I could just sort of be me. I like that a lot. I like that very much.
Yeah, it's a freedom. It really, it's like this gift of freedom. And I actually had a dance teacher who told me towards the end of my years, I think I was in a senior dance concert or something, and he made a comment about the ugly duckling. And I remember at the time I was so offended. Did he really say that? And then now I look back on it, I'm like, that was such a compliment. That was such a compliment. You know, it's like, it's about that growth and that transformation and that ability to change. And
yeah, you were a swan all along, Garina.
Thing.
Love that. Well, well, I know that it's been a journey leading to the Book of Mistakes, and that it's just the start of the journey because it just very recently came out. But I hope that it's a great one for you and that you get to enjoy so much along the way. In addition to, I know you're working on a second book, and you're working on other things. But I want to congratulate you again with such a beautiful book, and the experience that you will inevitably have of hearing the way that your work has affected other people. So thanks for sharing it with me.
Oh, thank you, Matthew. Thanks so much for having me here. Oh, really word. Appreciate it.
I've been waiting. I've been so excited.
Me too. I really am such a big fan.
I'm a big fan too. Before I let you go, I want to turn it back to the readers, because I think it's always such a beautiful place to end with them. We always start and end with them, don't we? So I'll ask you, I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Karina, what message can I bring to them from you?
Well, I would say, you know, however you're feeling, or whoever you are, whatever you're thinking, just know that you are not alone.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Margarita Engel and Rafael Lopez share Bravo, poems about amazing Hispanics. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.